Welcome to the Legally Sound Smart Business Show, your weekly look at legal news and questions in the business world. Here are your hosts, Nasser Pasha and Matt Staub.
This is Legally Sound Smart Business. This is Nasser Pasha.
And this is Matt Staub.
Welcome to this week's episode. I'm excited for this one. We have some good topics today.
We certainly do.
Lots happened since we last went. I hope everyone's holiday went well and everyone's small business Saturday went well as well. That was a fun day of shopping, I'm sure, for everyone.
I was out on Saturday and I didn't notice too many. I was actually downtown Indianapolis and I didn't notice too many signs up for any small business stuff, which was kind of surprising, but maybe just people know at this point.
Well, yeah, it's too cold over there. That's why.
Yeah, that's true.
Everyone's at home.
It's also too hard to keep track of all the days. You have Thanksgiving, then Black Friday, Small Business Saturday. I don't know what Sunday is. And then Cyber Monday, Giving Tuesday. It's like a full week of days.
Yeah, that's true.
Just keeps expanding.
Every day is a holiday.
All right, should we get into the first article here?
Yeah, let's do it.
This is another Amazon article, a little bit different than what we've talked about in the past. This is about a dispute with a company called Lush. Basically, they're trying to sell their products, and Amazon, for the reasons that it has, seems like it was more of a moral reason than anything, but they're not putting up their products on Amazon. And to make matters worse, if someone types in a Lush or some search that would typically pull that up, it brings up something saying, oh, similar products. So not only are they not putting up this company's products, but they're putting up their competitors' products, which obviously this company has a problem with.
Yeah, so Lush sells some kind of a cosmetic line, but they're known for their ethical considerations for everything, their ingredients and how they test and so forth. But with this infringement, it reminds me of Google AdWords. You know, a lot of small businesses, they advertise, and for small markets sometimes, or even big ones, you'll have competitors that actually bid on your keywords or even your company name. And so this is kind of the analogy that the lawsuit's based upon, in the sense that, okay, if someone searches Amazon.com on Google, send them to Best Buy or eBay. And that kind of actual use could be considered trademark infringement. And not only that, also a violation of the terms of service.
Right. I think they even mentioned that in the article, how they had bought up Google AdWords, Lush Bath Products.
Oh, I didn't even know they had involved AdWords. So that adds to it. When they have it on their own site, it's a different issue, but the trademark infringement analysis is still the same, right? If there's some kind of likelihood of confusion or some kind of affiliation made, so if these people are searching Lush and then all of a sudden they have these products that are not Lush and they think it is, then that might be an issue. But also the problem is Lush is kind of just a adjective, right? So I guess it could describe cosmetics. I don't know. I know you wear some, right? So you
yeah.
know more about that.
Yeah, my vast cosmetics knowledge. I mean, that sounds like it makes sense. I'm really not sure, though. I don't know anything about that stuff. But this is in the name of a company. I could see how that'd be in the name of a title of some products, though.
Yeah, well, we need a guest expert on cosmetics. We forgot to book somebody for that. Darn it.
I'll see if I can find someone before the end of the episode.
I don't know, all week, and this can't be a coincidence, but I've been seeing Amazon in the news all this week, and right in time for the holiday season, of course. You've heard about that Amazon Prime Air, right?
Yeah, that was a huge... I saw a bunch of people posting that story. You're talking about the drones?
Yeah, they have these small drones. I have no idea when this is going to be released or what have you. I just saw the headlines, but basically, you get your product within hours of ordering it, which that's pretty amazing and definitely the next step in online delivery.
Do you think they're actually going to roll that out at some point, or do you think it was more of a publicity thing? Because obviously people think that's really cool. That was the response that I saw, all these people posting this article saying, well, I guess some people thought it was cool and some people were kind of terrified, because I guess if you just see some device flying towards you with a huge box, I mean, you hope that it lands in the right spot, I guess. I don't know how they would operate.
I assume they're going to start in small markets and try it out. But they're just drones in general has been in the news because it's so accessible now. and the FAA is getting involved and privacy concerns because you can easily put a camera on there. I mean, heck, you can go to the mall and get one of those Quadra helicopters and put a camera in there and be able to spy on your neighbor pretty easily.
Yeah, I guess that's true. I wouldn't have thought of that, but I'm glad that you did.
Yeah, well, it's common knowledge. Come on. It's a concern.
The people at the kiosks always look like they're having so much fun with those helicopters. I guess that's why they want to make you buy one, is to look like they're having a fun time. I knew someone in college that bought one, and he like played with it for a couple of weeks, and I don't think he ever did anything. It was really cool for a couple of weeks, and then it was just, who cares?
Well, yeah. Well, now they're selling it with a camera, and I'm sure you'll have fun with that. But
and we really got off topic here.
Well, this brings us to our next question. Totally unrelated.
Okay. First question here. Can I dissolve my company that has a bunch of debt?
Yeah, you can pretty much dissolve any company. Where's this question from, by the way?
This is in Modesto, California.
Okay.
Or from Modesto.
So California, each state's a little bit different here. But the question of whether you can or cannot dissolve is probably not the answer you're looking for, because you can always dissolve a company whether you have debt or not. The question is whether the shareholders or the owners of the company are going to be responsible or liable for that debt.
Right. And I guess that's a worry that people have. I mean, I know a lot of people that I've talked to, and I'm sure the same is for you, when they want to set up an entity, they don't necessarily know what limited liability is, but they want to have it. And this kind of comes into play too with this, is that as long as you haven't personally guaranteed anything, signed off on that, you're only responsible for what you've contributed to the corporation or whatever the entity is.
And there's one exception to the rule. I guess I should say there's two exceptions. One is that if someone's able to pierce the corporate veil, and the corporate veil is what's referred to as that barrier between you being liable for any of the liabilities of the company. And there's all these categories of piercing the corporate veil, but to answer this particular question, when you dissolve a company, if you actually distribute assets, whether it's cash or property, to any of the shareholders around the time of dissolving, and you have a debt and you get sued on that debt, then it is possible to access those funds that were distributed to you. But unlike piercing the corporate veil, that liability is limited to how much was distributed to you. So it's not an unlimited liability all of a sudden. So you're still protected. And that just makes sense, right? I mean, if you have a company that has all these assets and it owes people money, and you just want to dissolve the company and collect all the assets, that's not really fair either. So it's designed to pay its creditors first.
Right. It makes perfect sense. If there's an asset that belonged to the company, that should be able to be something that's sold off and pay whatever debts that you have. It's just a matter of whether the creditors want to come after the shareholders to get that debt. If it's a significant amount, obviously, but if it's smaller, it might not be worth the hassle.
Yeah, that's right. And be careful about if you have an actual lawsuit pending against your company. When that happens, then you do have limitations on whether you can dissolve your company or not. Just keep that in mind.
Right. So let's go on to the next article here.
Oh, yeah. This is a bad one. This is upsetting, I think.
Yeah. So it dealt with someone who bought something online. I forget the name of the company. It's Clear Gear, Clear with a K.
Obviously something no one's ever heard of. And now that they've heard them, they're not going to feel very positive about the company.
Right. So this person bought something. I forget the specifics. I don't know if it didn't get delivered or never got sent or something happened.
I think they couldn't contact them. The customer service was bad or something like that.
Yeah, I think they tried to, and they couldn't even get a live person on the phone at any time. Eventually, the person wrote a negative review, as you should, for that kind of service on, I think it was Ripoff Report. And later, the company came after them. Apparently, they do have humans there, and they went after them for $3,500. And the person that bought the item said, hey, what is this about? And I guess in the agreement that they signed, they agreed to that. I'm sure they did not read through. There was a clause in there, a non-disparagement clause, saying your acceptance of this sales contract prohibits you from taking any action that negatively impacts cleargear.com. And that's it's pretty ridiculous when you think about that. You can't say anything bad. It's not even, you can't even say something bad that's unreasonable. It's just you can't say anything negative at all, no matter what, even if we do something bad. And that's essentially what happened.
And as lawyers, you actually see non-disparagement clauses quite a bit, but in agreements like settlement agreements, not in these consumer agreements. And apparently some of these investigators did some research, and these are actually starting to appear in some of our consumer contracts. Now, here's the deal, though, right, is does it make sense for a court to enforce such a contract clause? And generally, you know, people think about free speech, but the thing is, if you are contracting on a business transaction, there are certain speech that is not protected. And if you agree that upon purchasing this product that you aren't allowed to say anything bad about it, it's not necessarily a violation of free speech. The question is it a conscionable contract? Is it so ridiculous that no rightly minded person would enter into such terms, and it should not be enforceable because it's against public policy? That's the question.
Right. You're exactly right. I mean, in the example here, it's just the flat out, hey, you can't post anything negative at all. That's not going to be upheld in court, I would think, if it ended up going that far. They had another example in here too of a different company, some vacation rental. They at least changed it to unreasonable negative sentiment. So I guess that's a little bit better, but they wanted $10,000 if there was any post like that.
I wonder how a court would react to that. I don't know. And I know in the past we've talked about Yelp. We've talked about how small businesses are sometimes unduly hurt by these online reviews that may not be true. And there's nothing that they can do about it.
Right.
But how do you balance that with the real negative reviews, right? It's not fair to hide those.
That's a good point. And that's why in that vacation rentals, it hinges on the unreasonable part. Because if it is in fact unreasonable, let's say it's a disgruntled fired employee or some competitor, then yeah, that makes sense. But if it's someone who's writing something, there was a bad experience with the company, then that's a different story. So I think it would really depend on the facts in those situations. The original example, the way they had it set up, I'd be pretty surprised if a judge ruled that the people had to pay that $3,500. But I guess you never know until you're there.
Well, Matt, let's assume that unreasonable clause is enforceable. And you had a business client that wanted to have that in one of their contracts. How would you advise them?
The first thing I would do is ask them why they want that in there, what they're concerned about, and I guess it'd really depend on how they answered that. If they're worried about some former employee coming back and posting something, that'd be a follow-up question of, well, how are you treating your workers that they would want to come back and write that? If they're worried about a competitor, I'd be more okay with that, I guess.
Yeah, but if you think about it, if you have a client or a customer or a former employee that posts something negative and it's not true, then you have action anyway, right?
Yeah.
But if it is true, that's a tough one. And by the way, employees, I think, are different. I think if requiring your employees not to go out there and basically roll out your dirty laundry, I think that's fair. But you know, your customers, what happened to the customers is always right, you know?
Yeah, I guess you're right. This would be the agreement they signed as a sales contract. So they wouldn't even have that agreement in place with an employer competitor anyway. So it's dealing solely with the customers. Then my follow-up question to the business would be, are you concerned that you're not going to live up to the expectations that the consumers? I guess every business is going to make mistakes, but
yeah,
I guess I would just probe a little bit more into the reasoning behind why they want that in there. Businesses, when you have agreements formed, they want to cover as many bases as possible. So
yeah, but I also wonder, just as a consumer, if you see one of those kinds of clauses in the agreement, you wonder, okay, what kind of company is this that they're so concerned that they're not going to treat us well and we're going to retaliate against them?
You're also making the big assumption that the consumers are actually reading these agreements, which I would say 99% of them don't.
Yeah, that's true.
The unfortunate thing is, I bet this company that we first started off in the article here, I bet they have gotten away with this. I bet people have just paid it to get rid of it.
Oh, yeah.
It's a good amount of money, $3,500, but if they just want the hassle gone, I could see people doing it, which is really unfortunate.
No doubt. Let's talk about this next Facebook question. I think this is kind of relates. Instead of going to our next question, let's skip around a little bit.
Okay. Oh, this is a long one. All right. Let me get ready. All right.
I know if you have to read for more than 5 seconds, you get tired. So
once somebody posts something on Facebook and they decide to delete it, is it gone forever? Meaning, if someone ever wanted to go back and try to find a deleted post, would that be possible to do? The reason I am asking this is because a good friend of mine...
Yeah, sure. A good friend.
Sorry, there's some grammatical issues in this, so I'm trying to read around it. A good friend of mine posted something regarding his business in a very negative way. He now wants to take out a slander suit against the person that posted it. They removed the post, so is there any way to retrieve it? So basically, someone posted something negative about the business. They've since deleted it, but he wants to know if there's still an opportunity to go after that person for what would essentially be a defamation claim.
Yeah, defamation. You know, I've worked with Facebook before. They're tough to deal with because one of our clients had a disagreement with another party in which a Facebook page was involved and it had to do with the ownership of that Facebook page. And the problem is Facebook does not want to get involved in a lawsuit or wants to stay out of it. And we actually included in the lawsuit, but even then it was very difficult to get data from them. And they fought every subpoena and so forth. So even if you fought a lawsuit, getting the information, let alone information that's been deleted, may be difficult from a economical, practical point of view.
Yeah. So getting to the substance of the question, or what he's, I guess what he's actually asking is about a defamation claim. So
that's right.
It was published. We'll assume that it's false, I guess. I don't know that we don't have enough facts to know, but let's just assume it was false.
And it was defamatory.
Yeah, and has a tendency to injure the business. What do you think of something like this? Assuming this is a false claim, then it could give rise to a defamation lawsuit, but how does deleting it play into it?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think deleting it limits the damages, but I guess they're arguing the damage has been already done.
Yeah.
But compare this to the last article. That person posted their complaint on ripoffreport.com.
Yeah.
And one of the big criticisms of that site is that once you post something there, it's there forever. They will not delete it under very strict circumstances. Even if it's false, even with a defamatory judgment, they will not remove it. Here in Facebook, you actually have the option of removing it. So I would count your blessings in the fact that it was deleted. It could still be out there. And the fact that they did delete it shows remorse. And how much do you want to punish the person and go through the trouble of a lawsuit?
Right. And I'm not a litigator. I don't know how much. Obviously, you have to prove some sort of damages. I don't know what the amount of damages would be in that case. But
yeah, that's a tough one. That's going to be ranged, right?
Yeah.
And I think people in general downplay the cost of litigation. And cost is not just about how much you pay an attorney, but how stressful it is, even as a business owner, and how emotionally involved you can get. I mean, imagine going to court a bunch of times and going to court not soon, but maybe a year or 2 years later from when the incident happened. It's not a fun thing, and that's to be considered.
Yeah, it's very true. You have to really weigh the pros and cons of doing this. But if they posted it and it wasn't too bad and they deleted it, as long as it's not too detrimental, it's probably something just worth walking away from.
No doubt.
That's my take. Okay, so let's get into the next article here. Oh, this is an interesting one that I saw this past week, kind of playing off the whole shopping thing. Swarm Mobile is the name of this company, and they just got some funding, pretty big funding, $3.5 million. Essentially, what they're going to do is track customers inside stores by using people's smartphones. And how they're going to do it is they're going to have Wi-Fi in the stores, and people are going to, I guess, accept the terms of the Wi-Fi, which, again, going back to what we were saying before, people probably aren't going to read. Then at that point, it's going to track them, and businesses can get the data from this and figure out how people shop, just as they would on a website.
I didn't realize there were actually have terms and conditions that you actually have to accept. That's actually better than what I've heard with other companies doing this similar business.
I just assumed that was going to be the case, because if not, then there's some huge privacy issues, I would think.
I honestly don't know if they are, because I'm reading the same article you are. It doesn't say, but you would think, right? You would think that they give notice that, from what I recall, and there's really no, again, this is technology not keeping up with the law, there's no privacy protections that apply to this specific nature. For example, even every website has a privacy policy. But in reality, only in certain circumstances do websites actually required to have a privacy policy. Now, if you have one, you have to follow it. But only in California, where privacy protection is in the California state constitution, does it require businesses to actually have a privacy policy. And that may have changed too. I mean, there may be other states that have adopted that as well.
Like I said, I just assume that would be the case. I mean, there's going to be lawsuits no matter what, I would think. But sure, if they're just tracking people from their phones, it seems like a huge privacy concern. I mean, there's nothing preventing a store from having a video camera up for security purposes and watching people and seeing where they physically move. This just makes things a lot easier.
That's true.
So this is a much more efficient way to do what they could do through security cameras. But yeah, this is really interesting. I guess it'd still be a lot of work because you have to, even if you have the data, you'd have to plug in, you know, like, oh, this, we have a lot of people going to this area. You'd have to know what the area is or maybe the specific product. And I'm just thinking of a clothing store, for example. If the clothing moves around to different locations all the time, it's still seem like a lot of work, but I'm sure it's going to be pretty beneficial. And you can put the more popular items that people swarm to, no pun intended, at the spots where up front where people would see them first.
That's a good point about the cameras, by the way. I think location, seeing the location's fine, but I'm reading here that they say that in order to make a level playing field with online retailers, they're using all these other analytics. They're going to be able to track whether you're checking prices or researching different options at particular locations. And see, that's a little bit different than a video camera, right? That's pretty invasive.
Yeah, that's why obviously someone believes in it because they just got $3.5 million of funding. But if they can get around the privacy stuff, I can see this will be a really lucrative business because they'll sell this to every store out there because every store will want to know the data.
Yeah. Well, what they need to do is they need to make some benefit for the user too. So I can see how if I'm in a grocery store and I'm passing by milk and somehow it reminds me that I need to get milk, or if there's this particular new product that based upon my previous choices that I may like some sort of new pizza sauce, then it'd be nice to be reminded of that.
Had to bring that in there. It's just another example of technology evolving in retail. I saw something on TV maybe about a month ago about what's significant about this can of corn. Like, I don't know, but I guess it was the first food item that had a barcode on it. And before grocery stores, all the items didn't have barcodes. That's very, very far back, but barcodes on everything nowadays. It makes things so much quicker. I mean, I can't even imagine how it worked in the past, especially with how a computer system just writing up one item at a time. But the point I'm getting to, without getting too far off track, is that this could become pretty...
The history of barcodes.
Yeah, this could be pretty common in 5 years. That's something that no one even thinks about anymore. I wasn't going to go into the route of everyone that walks in should just have a barcode put on them and it gets scanned at every table they walk to, but...
This is similar to the pushback with Google privacy, your searches or any kind of website privacy, is in the sense that people have cookies on their website. And this was going on in the beginning of the internet, but then it took maybe 5 to 10 years later for people to realize, hey, this is an issue because they can track everything that we're doing, not only on this website, but on every website. And if we buy something here, I mean, how many of us have started shopping on one site and then on every other site there's an advertisement for that? I mean, I find that so annoying.
It's gotten pretty crazy. I know if you go on Facebook, I know I've seen a bunch of people post this. If they get recently engaged,
oh yeah,
they'll have a bunch of ads on the right column there that are all like wedding related stuff like that. That's really crazy how that works. But
I shopped for engagement rings years back, and for years afterwards, I was getting ads for engagement rings. I'm like, I've already got married. I'm fine. Thank you.
They're trying to send you a message, I guess. I don't know.
Well, all right. Anyway,
I shouldn't say I like your wife a lot, so I didn't want to. I didn't want that to come off negatively.
Yeah, that was so offensive. I don't even know what to say.
All right, I'm going to get into the next question before I get into too much trouble here. Okay, this is a pretty short one. This is another California one. This comes from Santa Barbara. When is it necessary to have a business license?
Yeah, this is one of those cases where I wish they would have told us what type of business they're in, because it's a short question, but I think it's a tough one because you have to look at both state, local, city, local county, zoning ordinances, all these different areas of law in which you may require a business license depending upon what industry you're in. So for example, if you're in a printing industry and you're making copies, in one area you may require a business license, but down the street you may not. And it really just depends. And if you're in any kind of highly regulated industry, whether it's health or any kind of manufacturing or what have you, or food for that matter, then that's also going to apply.
Right. There's a lot to look into. People don't think about all the different things that are out there. But I know, at least in California, there's a, I think it's a state, I would assume it's run by the state. There's a website that you can kind of plug in some of your details, and it'll give you a list of all the licenses that it thinks that you need based on your location, based on the type of industry you're in, your line of work. That's pretty helpful, but I assume they err on the side of giving you too many, because I know I've used it for clients in the past, and they definitely load you with as much as possible.
Yeah, I forgot about that. Let's post a link to that, because I think that'll be helpful. I just read an article. It was an article that we were going to cover about a woman who cooks inside her home. And this is not an uncommon business, and some kind of catering or baking business. And technically, she needed a business license, but the local ordinance changed it so that businesses like hers could operate. And those are small little changes. A lot of people wonder what the local government can do for businesses, and those are some small things that can go a long way.
You obviously don't have any data on this, but what percent of smaller businesses do you think just completely overlooked getting a license?
About 86.3% in California. I have no idea. Well, I think a lot do. I wouldn't be surprised if it's a majority, especially those very small businesses. Sometimes, you know, just in San Diego, for example, if you have to have a business permit, which is, I don't know what it is, like $40-some per year. But unless someone tells you about it, it's kind of difficult to know that you have to do it. And also, it's, I'm not sure how much they enforce it as well if you don't get it. I've never heard anyone, unless you're a big company and you don't have a business permit, I think you'll be fine, you know. And I think that it's $40, it's based upon per employee, right? Or I can't remember. I think that's the minimum.
Yeah, I think it's also based on location too.
Yeah, location.
I've done some for people that have been in different parts of the city in San Diego where it's been a lot cheaper than downtown, for example.
Yeah, exactly. Usually minimal, I mean, compared to other licensing fees.
Oh yeah, it's not that bad at all as long as you're paying it on time and paying it. Then they start hitting you with penalties. If not, then it could get a little bit pricey. But I think that answered that person's question. Let's assume it did.
If it didn't, you can just send a complaint to ask@legallysoundsmartbusiness.com. And also, if you don't have a complaint but have a question, it happens to be the same email address, so that should be more convenient for you.
Anything you want to write in, literally anything, just write into that email, and we'll sort it out. Don't worry.
But we'll probably trash the complaints, but we'll review the questions.
Yeah. All right. So the last article here, and this is a banker in New York City. Her name, Deborah Lee Lorenzana. If she's listening, I'm sorry if I mispronounced your name.
She accepts your apology.
Yeah. I read through this. It's a little bit weird, but I guess she's suing Citibank. She's claiming that she got fired for being too hot.
By the way, I doubt if that's what the lawsuit said.
Yeah.
But that's what sells articles, I'm sure.
Maybe that was a past law.
Yeah, that was a past.
Okay. I was gonna say it has to be a past lawsuit because it doesn't relate to her actual claim. Now, I guess her new claim is a nurse drew blood from her but screwed up, and she sustained injuries and suffered severe physical pain and mental anguish as a result. I mean, I want to know what exactly happened. It's not the first time that a nurse is screwed up. I remember someone I knew when we were younger. He's like, you know, he went in to get a shot and nurse stuck in the needle. She's like, whoops, wrong spot, and just took it out and stuck it back in. So I'm sure this happens frequently, but unless this was some sort of traumatic thing, I guess I'd have to know more facts about this to say more things about it. But coming from someone who once sued them for being too hot, it raises my eyebrow.
Well, one fact that you can't gloss over is that she was represented by Gloria Allred. And I have to mention that because, I mean, gosh, I have to hold my tongue a little bit here on the podcast, but I don't have a high opinion, as I'm sure a lot of attorneys don't, of her and her seemingly exploitation of her clients. But anyway, doesn't it seem like the same plaintiffs always find a reason to get into court? That works both ways. I think on the defendant's end, certain people are just more likely to get sued and get into trouble. But one thing that I would like to note is that in this past case, I don't think she won the case against Citibank, because at the end it says it went into arbitration and Citibank made it clear that it didn't pay her a cent.
Right. Yeah.
one lesson from this also is arbitration, even though I'm not a big fan of it in general, but one huge positive about it is that you can actually keep what happens in arbitration completely private. It's not a public court system in which everything can be publicly disclosed. So we don't know exactly what happened in that case.
Yeah, you're exactly right. Although I would like to know what was spoken in there. By reading the description here about how she claims her bosses told her they couldn't concentrate on their work because her appearance was too distracting. I mean, if they're actually saying stuff like that, I would find it hard to believe that she didn't win some sort of case against them. And
you're right, because there was a dentist in Florida who fired her employee. And again, the same headlines, because she was too hot or too attractive. And he actually ended up losing that case as a dentist for gender sex discrimination.
Right.
And it wasn't sexual harassment. It was basically she was being fired because of her sex. And so that was a basis for a winnable lawsuit. But you're right. The fact that they went through arbitration and Citi has, it's funny how they put it. Citi has made it clear that it didn't pay her a cent. I wonder if Citi owed any money, but just decided not to pay.
Yeah, I guess that's a good point, but I never heard of this woman before, and I just did a quick Google search before this, and she has all these like glamour pictures posing in front of Citibank, and that were like clearly done for as like a PR stint for the lawsuit. So there's like you said at the beginning, there's some people out there that just love to get involved in lawsuits, and when those people are involved, it's hard to take them. You have to take them seriously because they're suing you, but it's just very difficult to take them seriously in that sense. And a judge is probably going to look at it the same way. If this person that makes a living off of trying to sue people, it's kind of out of luck.
Yeah. Well, I think as a business owner, you have to be pretty active in watching out for these people, because once it happens, it's very difficult to not lose. Because imagine, it doesn't matter the circumstance. Now you're being sued. Now, if it's this person that wants publicity, the local newspapers picks it up. Now your business is in a bad light amongst the public, and it could be completely false, but who knows what kind of allegations they could be making. And this happens in every industry. Think about people that own houses. You have these rogue tenants that go from house to house and try to claim landlord-tenant violations. And you have employees that go to job and try to get fired for discrimination and build a case. And from the get-go, that's what they're doing for you.
Yeah, so would you advise to, I mean, I guess I would Google everyone's name that was applying for a job, and you could find these problematic people up front before having to even get involved with it.
I mean, that's true. It's not something that I've advised in the past, but I definitely would consider it in the future, especially in the hiring process. In background checks, you can generally, those things do come up, but not every business does a background check, and sometimes it's not worth it.
And just to give you an update, it said in that previous case, their statement was, this case is concluded, and Citibank did not enter into any kind of settlement with Ms. Lorenzana or provide any payment to her. So I don't know what happened in there, but it seems like she's probably asserting some pretty, not false things, but exaggerated claims is my guess.
Yeah. Again, to pick on Gloria Allred, which I think we should have a whole show just on her, but a lot of people think that because they've hired her, then there must be some kind of truth to what these people are saying, and they must be right. I'm not saying the other way either. I'm not saying that anybody that she represents must be telling the truth either. I'm just saying that she's, well, anyway, again, I should hold my tongue.
Yeah, I was going to cut you off if it got too bad, but it's funny because it says it's these types of attorneys that produce the people you see on TV shows and movies. So like Jackie Childs on Seinfeld or Better Call Saul on Breaking Bad. But it makes for some good humor in the TV and movie industry, at least.
Yeah, I mean, she was obviously a lot of people in San Diego, Dover, too. She was the one who represented a lot of the women involved with Mayor, what's his name?
Filner?
Filner, yeah, Mayor Filner. Obviously, those allegations ended up being true, at least as far as we know. And so a lot of San Diegans may know her from that, but a lot of other past publicity cases as well.
All right. I think that was a pretty good show. It might be our longest one yet as well. We'll see.
We'll cut it down. We'll probably cut out all the Gloria Allred stuff. Hey, Chris, just cut that whole section out. I don't want to be sued by her. Thank you for joining us. We didn't have a guest this week. We tried to find a Tyler, but we couldn't. So we'll just have to try next week. No, actually, we just wanted to give us a break a little bit this week.
Yeah, I guess we'll have to move on to a different name, and then we'll just try to find that name exclusively and then on to the next one. So if there's a potential Tyler out there, I'm sorry. We've already moved on, but we're going to have someone else in the near future.
In fact, from now on, a total ban on all guests named Tyler. No more guests named Tyler. Sorry.
Exactly.
All right. Well, this is the last episode of Legally Sound, right? Oh, no. This is our what? Oh, no. This is episode 8.
Episode 8, yeah.
Of League of Sound Smart Business.
Almost in double digits.
All right. Well, thank you for joining us. And of course, send your questions in to ask@legallysoundsmartbusiness.com. We enjoy reading them and answering them as well. And see you next week.
Yep. Thanks, everybody.
This has been the Legally Sound Smart Business Show with your hosts, Nasser Pasha and Matt Staub. The Legally Sound Smart Business Show is your weekly look at legal news and questions in the business world. Legally Sound Smart Business is a podcast that is intended but not promised or guaranteed to be current, complete, or up to date, and should in no way be taken as an indication of future results. No attorney-client relationship is created by listening or submitting questions to the podcast. The podcast does not constitute legal advice, but rather is offered only for general informational and educational purposes. You should not act or rely on any information in the podcast without first seeking the advice of an attorney. The opinions expressed in the podcast reflect the views of those individuals and do not necessarily represent the views of any other individual or business. For more information about the Legally Sound Smart Business Show, visit LegallySoundSmartBusiness.com.